shed, like the shaking of a sift that you try to filter, or wind sifting that you try to take away those people with shallow and with light faith, and you keep those with heavy faith. So it was a situation like this, that many people started to doubt, and some of them even showed their hypocrisy. Munafiqun, they started to spread fear and scaring people. They would even mock the Prophet ﷺ, because with the addition of the treason and betrayal of the Jewish community of Banu Qurayza, at the middle of the highest level of war, what they did was that they said, okay, now from the other side of Medina, Muslims have stopped the pagans, army of pagans, by the trench. Back, they, because in back of them, it was the castles of Banu Qurayza. So they had this peace of mind that, okay, from back we are safe because we have the charter of Medina, we are in a treaty with these people, that we are all in Medina, we should defend each other. But then they realized, no, the Jewish community of Banu Qurayza, they are trying to make connection with the pagans and try to attack Muslims from behind. And they had left their families, women and children, alone in the city. So the Prophet sent some people to Medina to guard the houses and the families. And then people in the army, they were so afraid, some of them, so scared, that the munafiqun, the hypocrites, started mocking the Prophet. Because the Prophet had promised his community that you're going to get Kasra and Qaisar, you're going to get the greatest empires of that time, Persian Empire and Roman Empire. And they would say, you know what, he's promising you to get those empires, but you cannot even get your own houses. So they started scaring people and also mocking the Prophet. But then the Prophet did not lose hope and did not lose his, because he trusted in the promise of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We're going to have a break and we're going to come back.
اللهم صل على محمد المصطفى اللهم صل على محمد المصطفى وعلي المرتضى وفاطمة الزهراء والحسن الرضا والحسن الرضا والحسين المصفى والحسين المصفى وجميع الأوصياء
Welcome back. This is Hussein, and you're listening to your program for Humanity from IRIB English Radio. We're talking about the story of the Battle of Trench and the treason of the Banu Qurayza. So once it took place, the treason and betrayal, and at the middle of the war, somehow the Prophet ﷺ could contain the problem, contain the threat posed by Banu Qurayza. When the war finished and the pagan army realized that they don't have a chance with Muslims and they retreated, they went back to Mecca. Immediately after that, the Prophet went to the castles of Banu Qurayza and he told them, okay, this is betrayal according to all the standards. What shall we do with you? So he offered them, the Prophet offered them to choose a judge from among the companions of the Prophet. Okay, if you want, it's up to you. Choose any companion that you like to be the judge and tell me what to do with you. And then they themselves chose Sa'd bin Mu'adh. And Sa'd said, okay, based on the biblical standards, based on the Old Testament, the Torah, your book, according to your book, treason at the time of war is punished by this, that the male and mature male members of the community should be killed, and then the other should be enslaved. And he said, according to your own standards, we deal you with your own standards. But there are different historical reports. Actually, there is a big thing that some Orientalists, some anti-Islam people have created over this. And there are some contradictory narratives about what exactly took place. What I'm trying to say is, even in the most problematic scenario, that Sa'd bin Mu'adh killed all the male members, still, the logic behind that was that, first of all, it has been issued, the verdict has been issued by a person they themselves chose. And again, it was based on their own teachings in their own scripture. Nevertheless, you have historians who would say that the whole story of killing all the male members of this tribe is a fabrication later on made by some of the rulers in the Islamic Ummah, who, according to the Shia Islam, were not infallible. They had problems, and because they wanted to justify their own cruelty, they needed to create something in the seerah of the Prophet to justify their own cruelty and to their own ruthless killing of other, like, for example, Hajjaj and other people who ruled Muslim Ummah, unfortunately, in different times, and they were cruel and they were ruthless. So they needed a kind of ideological background to justify their own unjust rule. So this is another analysis that is there that would say those narratives, those narrations telling us that all the male members were killed, they are later fabrications. Anyways, what happened was that Prophet ﷺ could manage the challenge of Banu Qurayza, whether by expelling them all or by that narrative of the killing by the verdict issued by Sa'd bin Mu'adh. Inshallah, we're going to continue the discussion about how the Prophet of Islam ﷺ overcame other challenges on his way to build a Muslim community, inshallah, in the next episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Jannah, it's all I ever wish for. This life is not eternal, but the next will last forever.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters. As Israel's deadly onslaught in Gaza continues, any notion of a ceasefire exists in name only, according to Francesca Albanese. The UN Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories told a European Parliament hearing on Tuesday via video link that relatively few countries have stood up for Palestinians.
The rest have been bending backward and forward to comply with the diktat of the United States, including European countries and European Union.
Albanese is scathing about the US-driven plan for Gaza's future, especially the reconstruction proposals.
The reconstruction plan not only is wrong as it's planned, because it's planned without the Palestinians and while the bombing and the shooting and the starving are still ongoing, but also because Gaza is a crime scene.
Several lawmakers expressed anger that Palestinians are not being placed at the center of discussions about Gaza's future.
It's so striking, the current EU reaction to the 28-point plan regarding Ukraine, where the EU very clearly said there's no plan without the Ukrainians.
Once again, fresh calls were made for the EU to halt all trade with the Israeli regime. There have been any number of debates and events in the European Parliament relating to the plight of Palestinians, but they effectively come to nothing. This is because any potential sanctions don't even get as far as here, the EU Council, and that is because the European Commission knows they'll be blocked by certain member states. Analysts argue that the EU has now taken a back seat on foreign policy, with the United States firmly in control.
I mean, the whole situation with the European Union in the Middle East now, it's clear there is no vision in Europe, there is no policy, at least no coherent policy.
Some legislators support Albanese's call for dual EU-Israeli nationals to be investigated upon re-entering the bloc, a measure previously applied to suspected foreign fighters returning from Daesh-controlled areas.
Was immediately, oh, this is a potential terrorist because he was fighting in the Middle East, and now it's completely silenced. I mean, the right wing, although they always talk about security and how to watch the borders so that no terrorists come inside, now they receive with open hands.
Albanese told the committee that the EU should suspend all ties with Israel, except those required to enforce international court rulings against Tel Aviv. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Braving the autumn chill, people across Indian-administered Kashmir gathered in large numbers on Tuesday to mark the martyrdom anniversary of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, the revered daughter of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Tuesday event concluded week-long ceremonies in Kashmir and the neighboring border area of Kargil, which featured religious gatherings, scholarly conferences and mourning processions to honor Hazrat Fatima.
Hazrat Fatima exemplifies the highest standards of behavior as a daughter, wife and mother. Her life stands as a timeless model of virtue for every generation. Although she lived only 18 years, her spiritual closeness to God earned her the title of Leader of the Women of Paradise.
Mourners emphasize that Hazrat Fatima's immense contribution to Islam is often overlooked, particularly in the West due to persistent misconceptions about women's rights and status in Islamic tradition.
Islam uniquely advocates gender equality and firmly protects women's rights. In an era where society increasingly commodifies women, the teachings and example of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, are more relevant than ever, offering a complete model of dignity and respect. Her moral integrity, humility and devotion make her unique among all women.
Speakers recalled Prophet Muhammad's profound love for his daughter, affection that directly challenged the norms of pre-Islamic Arabia, where daughters were frequently devalued.
Hazrat Fatima possessed qualities beyond description. She was a divine personality and a fountainhead of guidance and piety. Our holy prophet's love and respect for his daughter was so profound that it would stand up in her honor. Her unwavering defense of justice and rightful leadership reflects her commitment to truth, integrity, and the rights of the oppressed.
The speakers urged people to study Hazrat Fatima's life more deeply and draw inspiration from her patience, piety, and unwavering faith, saying her legacy remains a guiding light for Muslim women and a model of steadfastness and spiritual excellence.
As Kashmir joined the global Muslim community in remembering Hazrat Fatima Zahra, scholars and participants describe her as a timeless role model whose humility, strength and devotion continue to guide Muslims across generations. Sayyidri Safir, Indian administered Kashmir.
Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Larajani, arrived in Pakistan on Monday. His visit marks a significant step in the ongoing efforts by both countries to consolidate cooperation amid heightened regional tensions. Shortly after his arrival, Larajani met Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif, President Asif Ali Zardari, Deputy Prime Minister Ishaq Dar, and other high-ranking officials and think tank heads, engaging in wide-ranging discussions on bilateral ties and regional security. The discussions focused on expanding bilateral trade, with both sides reiterating their commitment to removing trade barriers, activating the barter trade mechanism, and expediting the Pakistan-Iran Free Trade Agreement. Larajani also praised Pakistan's support for Iran during the U.S.-Israeli aggression against the country earlier this year.
We discussed all key bilateral matters, especially how to expand our economic cooperation and strengthen trade. Pakistan is a true brotherly nation, and together we explored practical ways to deepen our security ties, enhance people-to-people contact, and coordinate our positions on major international issues.
Pakistani leadership underscored Islamabad's commitment to deepening political, economic, and security cooperation with Tehran.
We discussed all the regional, bilateral, and global issues. It was a wonderful meeting. I'm grateful to my brother Excellency for his visit and sparing time to meet with me. And we had very open discussion about all the issues which are currently being faced by the regional and the multilateral forums.
Observers say Larajani's visit signals a strategic recalibration in Iran's regional engagement after the June war with Israel. They say the visit also underscores Pakistan's rising relevance in Tehran's long-term vision, particularly in border security, regional trade, and balanced diplomacy in a volatile neighborhood.
We are proud of Iran's resistance. They have set a new example because they have shattered the myth of Israeli invincibility through the determination, through the will, and the fighting power of the Iranian nation. And we feel that Iran showed that imperialism, hegemony, Zionism. They say might is right, right is might. And they failed miserably in that.
Larajani is the second high-ranking Iranian official to visit Pakistan this month, after Parliament Speaker Mohammad Bakar Kalibaf.
The latest high-level meetings between the top officials of Iran and Pakistan show that the two neighbors are not only focused on boosting trade and economic partnerships, but also on developing coordinated mechanisms for regional peace and security. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Thanks to Trump, European Commission insiders say an atmosphere of fear and uncertainty continues to hang over EU-US trade relations. Meeting on Monday, EU trade ministers agreed the bloc must broaden its commercial horizons and seek additional stable partners.
What we are working on continuously, that we have to diversify our trade. The Commissioner gave us a state on ongoing negotiations with India and a number of other countries and regions in Asia, Middle East and Africa.
It emerged at Monday's meeting, attended by senior White House officials, that the EU has already paid €173 billion for US energy imports this year, much of it for costly liquefied natural gas shipped across the Atlantic. Those charges filter through industry and ultimately onto consumers. It's a stark contrast to the much cheaper Russian gas that once powered the EU. The head of the European Commission, Ursula von der Leyen, struck a deal with Trump at his golf course in Scotland last July. He had been threatening 50% US tariffs on all EU imports, but in the end they settled on a baseline 15% levy. Now Washington officials are annoyed at the EU over its slow implementation of that deal. punishing 50% U.S. tariffs on EU steel and aluminium remain firmly in place. The current trade arrangements have drawn sharp criticism from inside the European Parliament.
Trump is the worst bully in the schoolyard. He picks on everyone. You should never give in to blackmail. The more money we promise to pour into the U.S., the more they will demand from us.
EU citizens are equally scathing of the current U.S. administration.
I think it's just right now a pause maybe before, I know, like maybe then Trump decides to impose tariffs again or to increase them on us. And plus right now with the Ukraine plan, again, like the recently disclosed Ukraine plan, is going to be other tensions as well.
If Vance is taking the place of Trump because he's talking about that now, I think it's even more dangerous. And in a way, even if they go back and they will be less rude in a few years, I think the tune is set, if we can say this in English. I think it's very dangerous. Yeah, I think so.
Government leaders are being accused of surrendering far too much ground to Trump on trade, leaving millions of already struggling EU businesses and households to shoulder the cost. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Italian prosecutors will have to decide whether to put the suspects, who today are between 65 and 80 years old, on trial. They are suspected of voluntary murder aggravated by cruelty and abject motives, a crime which has no statute of limitations and carries a maximum life sentence. Some political analysts believe that the whole Sarajevo sniper tourism affair can also be read through the lens of geopolitics. They suspect that there are governments who are trying to link Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić to the so-called sniper safaris that took place in Bosnia in the 1990s.
The risk that this affair is turned into a political tool clearly exists. Some may be eager to find political implications in these murders, but they would be wrong. Those were just criminal acts.
I think it could well be politicized because the information that we have at the moment is very murky indeed, and no concrete details are being given as to what is actually being investigated. Neither the numbers, nor the people involved, nor the countries involved.
During the Rome press conference, Gavazzeni also pointed out that Italy's military intelligence agency was aware of the abominable trips when they took place, but nothing was done to stop them. Max Civili, Rome.
Next to the conscientious objector's commemorative stone, a demonstration rooted in conscience. Demonstrators, some from other parts of Europe, defying the elements and threats of arrest, holding placards that have become symbols of nonviolent action.
What people here are doing and what the widespread wave of civil disobedience that we've started with Defend Our Juries is against the prescription of Palestine Action. And that prescription, which is now being challenged in the High Court next week, is basically what we're arguing, that it is unjust, it's immoral, and it should have never happened. And it is really a breach of everyone's civil liberties. It is really an attack on democracy.
Before long come the arrests. Since these protests first began in the summer, British police have arrested more than 2,000, charging hundreds under terror laws in a move the demonstrators say is to stifle dissent against the UK's complicity in Israel's genocidal war on Palestinians.
They've attempted to use terrorism legislation to remove from all public discourse the one body of people in this country who, as citizens, have stood up and put their bodies on the line to materially interrupt an economic, military, and diplomatic collaboration in genocide.
Palestine Action was prescribed by former Home Secretary Yvette Cooper in June this year. Membership of or support for the group is punishable by up to 14 years in prison.
The government is complicit in the genocide in Gaza, and they will do anything to criminalize any resistance against it, including old people sat with signs saying, "I oppose genocide."
In an unprecedented move in British history, Palestine Action is challenging its prescription in this court starting November 25th in the form of a judicial review. If the High Court votes in favor of Palestine action, the thousands of arrests and the hundreds of charges that were brought against demonstrators like these under the Terrorism Act of 2000 will also be quashed. A victory for Palestine Action would also have repercussions for its jailed members, six of whom are now on an open-ended hunger strike in prisons across Britain. Saipur is in London.
Israel has struck a residential building in the heart of the Beirut suburbs. The third and fourth floors of a nine-story building were badly damaged, with debris filling the road, damaging cars and property. Deputy head of Hezbollah Political Bureau confirmed to Press TV that a senior commander was targeted in the strike.
This is an attempted assassination, targeting a key leader within the resistance. What matters now is that we document this as a clear act of aggression, an escalation we cannot and will not tolerate. It is our responsibility at the national level to establish a response that confronts Israel's attempt to undermine our sovereignty.
Although the Israeli statement said the target was a commander in the resistance, people near the scene say Israeli strikes are targeting everyone.
I am from this neighborhood. Every time they come up with this claim that they are targeting a member of the resistance, we are all members of the resistance. I want to tell our prime minister, who was a judge in the international court, if your diplomacy can't protect us and solve our crisis, then leave us to be and don't speak in our name. And this mechanism is obviously biased towards Israel.
Alice believes the Israeli claims that Hezbollah has rehabilitated is merely preparing the ground for a larger escalation and a U.S. green light for this aggression.
This marks a new level of violation, and there are two potential outcomes. Either the resistance retaliates, which would escalate into a full-scale war, or they absorb this blow, which could embolden Israel to carry out further strikes. Both options are devastating. This is a turning point. With Israel seeking to normalize its escalation in Lebanon, backed by U.S. support, and with the Lebanese government failing to take action.
President Joseph Aoun called on the international community to intervene firmly to stop Israeli attacks on the country. Lebanon, he said, reiterates its call to the international community to assume its responsibility and intervene firmly and seriously to stop the attacks on Lebanon and its people. The Israeli strike on the southern suburbs of Beirut and the U.S. blessing are considered part of the growing pressure by both sides to enforce full surrender by Hezbollah and full compliance of the Lebanese government to disarm the resistance. However, many believe that this opens the way for different scenarios, especially if the resistance decides it is time to retaliate. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
I'm waking up for Fajr. Gotta make wudu, gotta pray my sunnah. Got me ghusl, gotta clip my nails. Looking outside, the sun is rising. Up in the sky, everybody's rushing. Gotta get down to the masjid. Gotta say salam to the imam. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the prophet did. It's Juma, Juma. Gotta make thinking on Juma. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Juma, Juma. Gotta make thinking on Juma. Everybody's looking forward to the edger. Miss Wacken, Miss Wacken. Yeah! Miss Wacken, Miss Wacken. Whoa! Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah the Kahf. 12:45, the imam's on the minbar. Talking about something like fiqh as a cat. They're whispering, chatting from the crowd. Don't they know that it's haram? I stand up, you stand up. Praise about to start by the qamat al-salah. Foot to foot, shoulder to shoulder. Just don't step on me. Sitting in the first saf, chilling in the back saf. Gotta make my mind up, do what the prophet did. It's Juma, Juma. Gotta make thinking on Juma.
swacking, miss swacking. Whoa. Pray, 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 pray. Gotta read Surah Al-Dikha. It's Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy, mercy. Jumu'ah, Jumu'ah. Gotta make thinking on Jumu'ah. Everybody's looking forward to his mercy.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program The Key here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we are going to be examining a very important question. And that question is related to, in general, it's related to one of the very important virtues within Islam, which is the virtue of knowledge. Of course, knowledge is not a final and essential virtue. Obviously, knowledge is a prelude to action and acting upon knowledge, which is essentially virtuous. But nevertheless, as a preliminary and a prelude to knowledge, as a prelude to action, knowledge is significant. And how can we have knowledge if nobody teaches us? So teaching others is also very virtuous. Today on The Key, the question we want to pose today is this: what are the blessings that result from teaching? In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from the hadith which have been passed down to us regarding this very significant topic. In the book Tanbih al-Khawatir, it has been related that God Most High revealed the following to the Prophet Moses, saying, O Moses, learn good and teach it to people. For verily I enlighten the graves of the teachers and the learners of good, so that they never feel afraid in their resting place. So one of the blessings of teaching, one of the good results and consequences of teaching, is that it leads to the luminosity, enlightenment of the grave of the person who taught and the one who learned from the person. In a beautiful tradition narrated from the Prophet Jesus, may peace be upon him as well as our Prophet, it's been reported that he said, he who has knowledge acts upon what he knows and teaches it to others, this person is regarded as great in the greatest kingdom of heaven. This is a famous hadith. Du'iya fi malakut as-samawati azima. In this hadith, it's been mentioned, fi malakut al-a'la, azima. Right, so even though, unfortunately, today teaching is regarded as a very, significant profession, even teachers are not paid a lot, but in the eyes of God, teaching is a very noble profession, and in the heavens, in the spiritual kingdom, these people are respected, by the angels and considered as very great individuals. Once the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "The best form of charity is for a man to gain knowledge, and then teach it to his fellow brother." And the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam also said, "Any man who has been granted knowledge by God, but who suppresses it, in spite of knowing it, will meet God, mighty and exalted, on the day of resurrection, bridled with a rain of fire." So not only is teaching virtuous and, recommended, but suppressing knowledge and not teaching it is very bad and has been considered as a meriting punishment on the day of judgment. Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported as having said this: God does not obligate the ignorant to learn until he has obliged the knowledgeable to teach. So it's both ways, both on the part of the student and the teacher. You know, both of them have a duty. The teacher is responsible to instruct his student, and the student to learn from the teacher. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We're looking at the blessings and consequences of knowledge in the light of the hadith of the infallibles, alayhim assalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
From east to west, throughout the vast land of Iran, you're listening to IRIB English Radio.
Thank you for joining us. The Hebrew media focused on the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Paris and on the path of the aggression against Gaza and Lebanon and on the concerns in the occupation entity over Hezbollah's possible response to the assassination of the senior commander, Haytham Tabtabai. In addition to Trump's attempts to accelerate normalization between Saudi Arabia and the Israeli entity. These were among the topics highlighted in the comments of analysts in Hebrew media, and we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr.
Good morning. Mohammad.
The visit of Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi to Paris was a main point of interest in the Hebrew media, which viewed Iran as still politically and militarily strong, and that Araghchi's talks in France will come from a position of Iranian strength, not the opposite. Well, Dr. Mohammad, is the Iranian visit or the Iranian Foreign Minister's visit to France a bad sign to Israel?
It can be looked in two ways. Some Israelis consider that it is very important, and they consider that Iran is still strong. And the other, they say that when Araghchi goes to France and to the three Europeans, means that they are in a weak position. So this is what is going on in the media of Israel. But in reality, the French, British and the German, they are anxious of the growing power of Iran. And they know that when they had heard of Araghchi that we are still fine and we are, and our budget is three times tripled from before and so on. And they know that the Iran has escalated their nuclear production, as well as their missiles and so on. And they are afraid also that these inventions or these military projects can be transferred or that can be given to Russia. And that's why they are afraid that this support to Russia would help in the war that's going on with Ukraine, as well as this will threaten Europe. That's why they consider that we have to calm down, although the three had ordered more sanctions on Iran, and they consider that by these sanctions, Iran would submit. But on the contrary, the sanctions did give a kind of morale to Iran, and they are going there.
But isn't that contradictory? Because you've highlighted that they are the ones, part of the countries that that imposed sanctions on Iran, and now this visit, as if giving a different impression.
Yeah, this is on one side. On the other side, they say that Iran is weak, the other analysis.
Okay.
But what we know is that they are afraid that Iran also would retaliate or would attack Israel. And that's why also they are afraid that
Okay, and how would Israel view this, Dr. Mohammed? Israelis, it's a bad sign to them?
I said it. There are opposite opinions in Israel. Mm. Some consider that Israel, Iran is weak now.
Okay.
That's why it is going to Europe.
Okay, and some
and the others say
it
no,
strong.
It is not. It is strong, and they are going. And Araghchi goes to Europe or to France
okay.
in order to ask for lessening down the sanctions and to have better relations for that. And they are afraid. The Israelis are
yes.
afraid of any escalation that Iran would do, especially after the what had been mentioned by the leaders of Iran after the attack of the Lebanese leader
mm-hmm.
when he was assassinated, and they said that we have to revenge.
Okay.
And this would make the Israelis very cautious and anxious.
Okay, however, Israeli concern over a possible Hezbollah response to the attack on the southern suburb of Beirut and the assassination of the martyr commander Abu Ali Tabtaba'i continued to dominate political and media discussion in the entity, and the Hebrew media reflected this state of anxiety. How do you expect the situation to develop on the Lebanese-Israeli front in light of the assassination of Tabtaba'i?
Of course, the Israelis are now considering the situation that they did not kill or did not assassinate a symbolic military person. No, they do know that they have assassinated the chief of staff. And this is a very, and his loss or his death is a serious blow to the Lebanese. That's why they are anxious that the
How would the response look
the
like?
The response will be the same. They are, but here what's going on? The resistance in Lebanon or Hezbollah do know, Hezbollah knows that there are still 5 points that Israel are occupying, that they had lost one of the leaders and so on, even though the Iranians had publicly said that they called for revenge, as I said before,
mm-hmm.
and so on. But Hezbollah now is calculating it very carefully, considering that they had lost, and at the same time they have to do something that would make not a reward, but at least that they compensate this loss in an attack. That's why they are calculating it very carefully and very seriously.
Yes, but would the Israelis read it in such a manner?
Would
it read it as a wisdom and patience from Hezbollah's side, or would it view it as weakness?
No, they are seeing
retreating
it
from retaliation.
The same as they are looking to the visit of Araghchi to France. There are two opinions in the regime, the Israeli regime. They consider that it is a sign of weakness and they can do nothing and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, they say, no, be careful. The Hezbollah is still strong, is still having rockets, he's still having drones. We have to take care. That's why they are afraid now of the 5 points in the south. They are afraid of the northern area in Palestine and so on. That's why they are making a kind of warning to these people to be careful if there will be a kind of retaliation from Hezbollah.
And they were doing maneuvers also at the border.
Of course, they are doing all these things.
Okay.
That's why
they are on alert.
They are alert now.
Okay.
And at the same time, we have to say, we can say it briefly, all options are open.
Okay. Israeli social media focused on the state of alert and fear over Hezbollah's potential response to the assassination of the martyr Tabtaba'i. And here are some of the comments.
Ami Rojax, Hezbollah is astonishing in its ability to survive and in the decentralization of its leadership. And no matter how many of its leaders Israel assassinates, it always rises again and refuses to give up its weapons. Alon Fishman, there was a war in Lebanon that ended with our withdrawal from most areas in exchange for Lebanon committing to dismantle Hezbollah. But what we see now is that Hezbollah is arming itself. Daniel Amram, The alert level in the north was raised after the assassination of Hezbollah's chief of staff, out of fear of rocket fire into the depth, or infiltration into Israeli territory, or into positions controlled by the army in southern Lebanon.
How would you comment on these remarks highlighted by Israeli people and stating that there's the Israeli government asked the north settlers to actually stay on alert? And how do you think they view this assassination of Martyr Taptaba'i, in fear or in pride?
In both. They did find that the Hezbollah is still strong, is still able, can retaliate, can attack, and so on. And at the same time, some others consider that by assassinating this leader or the other leaders, this will weaken them. But if you go to the mass media or to the masses in the occupied Palestine or the Israeli regime, they consider that Hezbollah is still a very critical threat to them. And that's why they are planning to control or to make a siege or to raise the problems with the Americans.
Yes, but some of these remarks actually highlight that Netanyahu's his own credits are still high.
Of course.
Especially after such an assassination.
Of course. You know.
Will he gain more support with these kind of moves?
If we want to take it into the Israelis, they feel a kind of ecstasy when they know that they had lost this one. But when they think deeply, they say that this is a new threat. Mm-hmm. And some others would say that Netanyahu is leading them or pulling their legs to accept this situation for political interests of
to what
Netanyahu
extent
himself.
Will these actions and decisions made by Netanyahu, whether domestically or in the region, add to his own election campaign or to his own election ambition?
You summarized that.
Yes.
What Netanyahu?
That's his utmost goal, Dr. Muhammad.
To Netanyahu.
That's the utmost goal behind these assassinations.
To preserve his own seat. There is another thing. There is also the court. There is how he is accused of many crimes and corruption and so on. But now he is raising this issue because the elections are so close. And that's why he is doing his best to keep his picture.
Would it benefit him if Hezbollah retaliated?
I think that Hezbollah will study that well. I cannot say Hezbollah will do. But according to me,
do you think that Netanyahu wants to drag them into a war?
It. This is one of the
to benefit in the elections.
Of course. You see, there is a kind of pulling the legs of Hezbollah that Netanyahu would have an excuse to say that, you see, I told you that this is a threat and that's it. This is well studied by the leaders of Hezbollah.
Okay.
And they are studying it carefully and objectively.
Okay, the growing relations between the United States and Saudi Arabia are a major interest for the Israeli entity as they facilitate the path towards Saudi-Israeli normalization, according to one commentator in Hebrew media. Do you really think that Zionists are convinced that strengthening U.S.-Saudi relations serves Israeli interests?
Yes. You see, your questions are really of double face.
Yes.
You cannot take one point of that. Some Israelis and most of the leaders consider that the more the relation between Saudi Arabia and the United States is going in a track that doesn't make any challenge or any threat to the Israeli regime.
Yes.
Because they consider that this is not military, this is not politically, it is mostly economic. And that's why Trump is pulling the money or taking the money of the Saudi Arabians and the Gulf for their interests. And at the same time, they are considering that the more relation between the United States and Saudi Arabia will make a deterrence against Iran. And this will keep Iran aside. the more they are involved in that. But at the same time, Israel is worried.
Why?
Worried because there is a kind of the missile systems that will be done in the will be produced in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, but whatever is produced is given to the United States of the America of America, and the United States of America is giving it to Israel.
Of course.
So Israelis are benefiting both ways.
Benefit, but at the same time, they know that Saudi Arabia has limits in doing that. Saudi Arabia is a kind of guardian to the holy places of the Islamic world, and at the same time, they have the atomic. Now they are planning to have atomic plants and so on for a kind of not military, but at least they are afraid of that, and.
Okay, but there is another. Yes, please continue.
They are afraid that the United States would leverage or would lessen the sanctions on Iran by the pressure that Bin Salman is trying to do. Bin Salman has also interests in having good relations with Iran.
Yes.
That's why they are afraid that this might also lead Iran to have more power, and this will threaten Israel.
Okay, what do you think of the claim that normalizing with Israel will actually strengthen Saudi national security? Because also there are different views to what the analysis you've just given.
Of course, look, the Saudis are keeping the door open. It's not closed or half open. Why? Because, as I said, that they are guardians of the Muslim holy places.
That's what's stopping them from normalizing up to this moment. That's what's holding them back.
This is one. They are afraid that any normalization would empower the stand of Iran, who is saying that Israel is occupying Palestine and so on. And at the same time, the street in Saudi Arabia. Don't take only what is said in the media of the Saudi Arabia or even in the Gulf, but if you go down to the people are opposing such kind of relation with this entity, with this Israeli or Zionist state,
mm-hmm.
and that's why the Saudi Arabia were said it bluntly, and as we say, it was crystal clear. They said that. No normalization without a serious, irreversible
solution.
Step towards a Palestinian state.
Okay.
And this, of course, according to Israel, is an impossible issue.
Okay, but why do some Israelis believe that it's for the benefit of the Saudis to go into normalization? Because that will guarantee Saudi's social Saudi national security. That's what the Israelis feel sometimes when they view about Saudi Arabia. They feel that the Saudis are in need of the protection of the Israelis in order to preserve their national security.
Saudi Arabia is not in need of Israeli protection. Saudi Arabia and the Gulf is in need
but
of the United States.
But Emirates is benefiting
States.
A lot, United Arab Emirates.
Yes, but economically.
Yes, maybe Saudi Arabia
politically,
wants to say.
But not in security.
Okay.
Because the Gulf is protected by the United States. The military bases are...
So it's a different matter.
Of course. Here, the United States is not Israel. Although they are very close allies and they are with great relations, but the interests are different.
Mm-hmm.
And Saudi Arabia is working now economically as well as politically and avoiding the embarrassment that will face if any step of normalization had taken place, especially that there are something waiting.
Okay.
Who is waiting? Iran and its allies, they consider.
Okay,
that's
moving
why.
To what can be called field normalization, Dr. Muhammad. Moving to what can be called field normalization, where work continues on creating railway lines connecting some Arab countries with the Israeli entity. Your opinion on the continuation of the work on the railway line between some Arab countries and Israelis, despite the massacres that has been taking place in Lebanon, Gaza, Yemen, Syria?
I think that the UAE means the Emirates.
Mm-hmm.
They have normalization between them and Israel. They are normal relations officially. But
what about some other countries that are still continuing the work on the railway line?
This is economically. Now the United States is also approving this and saying that go on, proceed, having the East, which is Emirate, Gulf, and the West, which is the Mediterranean. And they want this railway and for economical reasons in order to confront what is China doing.
Okay.
You have to take it in this prospect. We cannot say that the Chinese influence is not there. It is to block the more relations with China. And at the same time, we must know that what goes on between the Emirates and Israel and Israel is mostly economic,
okay,
mostly logistic, mostly technological, and so on. The question is, what if the oil stopped? What can they do?
Yes.
Then everything will be collapsed.
Okay, so it's based on these aspects. Dr. Mohammad Qasem, writer and political analyst, thank you very much for your analysis in today's episode.
Good morning to you all. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran. We are very glad to have you with us. I'm your host for the next hour. Muslim scholars such as Abu Ali Sina or Ibn Sina, 1980 to 1037, known in the West as Avicenna, made very significant and substantial advances and discoveries in medicine. When Christians came into contact with the Muslim world during the Crusades, they brought back Muslim scholarship, which in turn helped spark the European Renaissance. Islamic astronomy became highly advanced during the Middle Ages. Astronomy was important to Muslims because it could be used to figure out the direction of Mecca so that people knew which way to face during prayers. This is one example of how the Western world is still influenced by Muslim innovations. Thank you for listening. You are listening to Iran Radio, and now the continuation of the programs. We start this hour's programs with our morning news bulletin. After that, we have Unscripted. The program provides analysis and commentary on some important and sensitive issues of the day, with emphasis on the West Asia region. Our varied radio productions feature will be our final program this hour.
Ayatollah Khamenei rejects rumors of Tehran sending Washington messages asking for dialogue. The leader says the U.S. is not worthy of negotiation with Iran. Hamas condemns Israel's execution of two unarmed Palestinian men in the occupied West Bank, calling it part of the regime's systematic genocide against Palestinians. And Venezuela revokes flights rights for six major international airlines that had stopped flying to Caracas, saying they joined state terrorism promoted by the U.S. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, hello to you from Tehran, Iran. I am Bahman Rayan, and this is news. The leader of the Islamic Revolution has dismissed rumors that Tehran has sent messages to Washington seeking dialogue, stressing that the United States is unworthy of cooperation with Iran.